Blue Lit Lettering, Dimension Films. A neon sign for the Rialto Cinema reads, "Sneak preview, tonight only, stab." People queue up along the sidewalk. Inside, they approach the ticket kiosk. A stylish young black woman, Maureen, is talking to her partner. Phil's over 6 foot with a shaved head.
I hate scary movies. I should be studying. You know I gotta buy them.
Baby, did I mention that these tickets are free? Free.
Sandra Bullock is playing right down the street.
Nobody wanna pay $7.50 to see some Sandra Bullock shit. That she naked.
Oh, but you will sit through a movie called Stab.
It's adrenaline, Maureen. It's good to be scared. It's primal, you know what I'm saying?
No, I'm gonna tell you what it is, okay? What? It's a dumbass white movie about some dumbass white girls getting their white asses cut the fuck up, okay?
Yeah, I suppose Sandra Bullock is Miss Ethnicity, right?
Well, no, all I'm saying is that the horror genre is historical for excluding the African-American element.
Well, then how you get your PhD in cinema, Sister Soldier?
Listen, I read my Entertainment Weekly, okay? I know my shit.
Yeah, Maureen, I read my Black Beat too, homie. Tonight we're gonna have an all-black movie, all-black cast, all-black wardrobe, black eyes. Everything, black eyed peas, black cats.
She's handed a pack with a skull logo.
Here you go. What's this? Stab souvenirs, the studio sent them. And it's white. Thanks.
Phil shrugs at the usher, takes his publicity pack, and follows Maureen into the dark cinema. People in the audience are putting on the free gifts, a black mask with a white latex skull on it, a black cloak and a dagger. One guy chases after a girl trying to stab her.
Romantic.
The movie begins. On screen, the title, Stab. A black specter flies over the audience. Maureen ducks.
Oh.
It's operated by an usher at the back. On screen, in acid green writing, based on the book The Woodborough Murders by Gail Weathers. Maureen and Phil take their seats. Maureen rolls her eyes and sighs. Phil puts his arm around her, holding her tight. A man operates an ultraviolet light. The audience's pretend daggers glow green. Phil gets out his mask and animates the skull face. The movie begins. It's night. Large modern house overlooks an illuminated swimming pool. In the audience, Maureen looks tense. Phil, excited. On screen, a young white woman in a bathrobe comes into her bathroom. Lightning flashes. Maureen cringes down in her seat. On screen, the blonde turns on the shower. The lightning turns the water blue. Maureen winces. The blonde tests the temperature of the water with a hand, then slips off her robe. It crumples to the floor. Maureen looks away.
What does that have to do with the plot of the story, her being butt-ass naked?
I don't know about the plot, but I got a stiff one.
You better loosen up that wrist.
The blonde hears the phone and turns. She picks up her robe and walks out as a hooded skull figure appears at the window. The masked figures in the audience wave their daggers. The girl pads through to the kitchen. Steam rises from the outdoor pool.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
Guess.
No, really, who is this?
Were you expecting somebody?
No. Bitch, hang the phone up and start 69 his ass. Damn!
Phil hushes Maureen.
Who would you like it to be?
I don't like games. Who is this?
Lightning illuminates a figure on the roof.
Look out back. Do you see your boyfriend anywhere?
I don't even have a boyfriend right now.
Would you like one?
Can I? Give me some money. I need to get some popcorn.
You got money.
I got my money. I asked for your money.
What do you say?
Phil rummages in his jacket.
Thank you.
Come on.
Maureen goes.
You know, I don't even know you, and I dislike you already.
Leaving the auditorium, Maureen takes a deep breath and marches into the foyer towards the popcorn counter. Hearing something behind her, she turns. Eyes fearful, she stands rooted for a moment, then backs away. She passes several ushers and reaches the popcorn counter.
Can I have a medium popcorn, no butter, and a small Diet Pepsi?
You got it.
Thank
That's it. I am not going back in there.
Come on, you chicken shit. It's just a movie.
No, it's not just a movie. It's a true story. All these kids got killed a couple years ago in California.
Maureen listens to the girls queuing behind her, takes her popcorn, and heads back. Guys in masks and cloaks dart down the stairs, mock fighting. Maureen reaches the doors to the auditorium. As she peers cautiously, and a masked figure leaps out behind her. Phil pulls off his mask.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I had to, baby.
What are you playing?
Would you relax? God, what's wrong with you?
I don't like being scared. I don't like that.
Baby, it's just a movie. Besides, scary movies are great for play.
Excuse me?
She checks him with a glare.
Let's go see Sandra Bullock.
Oh, no. Sandra started already. We can stay. Just stop playing so much.
She kisses him.
Right. I gotta go to the bathroom.
He chucks her under the chin. And heads off. Steeling herself, Maureen takes a deep breath. She ventures into the auditorium. On screen, a window in the glass-walled room shatters. Maureen's eyes are glued to the screen, watching the blonde running through the house. A foil-wrapped meal warming on the grill catches fire. Maureen makes her way to her seat, clutching her popcorn and Pepsi. Masked figures in the rows in front of her make gleeful, menacing gestures. Maureen pulls on her cardigan, her eyes glued to the film. The blonde runs into her bedroom, slamming the door on the masked figure just in time. Maureen shifts nervously in her seat. Phil dashes into the gents. Two masked figures are at the urinals. Phil jiggles as he waits behind them. He checks his watch. The figures look at each other, then turn their latex skulls to Phil. The mouths hang open in a silent scream. Phil shifts from foot to foot, then heads for a cubicle. It's locked.
Sorry.
Phil tries the one next door.
Hello?
Gingerly, he pushes the door open and steps in. He stands in front of the toilet, fiddling with his flies, his back to the open door. He hears noises from the next cubicle. He turns, frowning. He puts his ear closer to the partition. Screwing up his face, he listens close. A skull looms up and draws a dagger. Phil stabbed through the cubicle wall. The blade lacerates his cheek. Blood streams from his mouth as he recoils. The masked figure withdraws the blade, admiring the blood. Clutching the wound, Phil sinks to the floor. The masked figure steps out of the neighboring cubicle and waits. Another cloaked figure leaves the urinal area. The murderer looks down at Phil's bloody body, prostrate on the tiled floor. Back in the movie, the blonde creeps out into the garden. Maureen waves at the screen. The blonde crawls past the living room windows, peering up to look in.
Move, move, go.
A masked figure wearing Phil's leather jacket sits down next to Maureen.
Baby, give it up.
The masked figure makes no reaction.
You came back just in time. It looks like she's about to get it. Want some popcorn?
It shakes its head. Maureen looks at the screen.
See, if that was me, I would be out of there.
The blonde passes a window, a figure dives through it. Maureen clutches the masked figure beside her. The masked figure in the movie catches the blonde, putting its hand over her mouth. Maureen hides behind the man she thinks is Phil, as the blonde is stabbed in the neck. Maureen winces at the screen, then looks down at her hand and frowns. As the blonde tussles with her attacker, Maureen finds her own hands covered in blood. The blonde hauls herself across the ground. Maureen stares at the masked figure beside her. The figure produces a knife and stabs her. Maureen stares in horror, then doubles over. On screen, the blonde is dragged away by the masked man. Maureen gets unsteadily to her feet. Swaying, she staggers away, the masked figure in Phil's jacket makes to follow. As she stumbles up the aisle, it catches her, stabbing her again and again. The rest of the audience, all in their masks, erupt in a frenzy of mock stabbing, using their plastic glow-in-the-dark daggers. In the middle of it, the figure, using a real dagger, stabs Maureen in the back. As the on-screen heroine is brutally murdered, the attacker plunges his dagger into Maureen one more time. Maureen crawls unsteadily to the front of the auditorium. The audience watch bemused as she stands silhouetted against the screen. Behind her, a huge close-up of the skull mask. Blood oozes from Maureen's mouth. The audience, shocked, remove their masks and fall silent as Maureen slumps in front of them. Against a black background, the title, Scream 2. Daylight, trees frame a view of a large college building. Students stroll along a path towards a colonnaded corridor. In an upstairs room, a young white woman in a single bed struggles to rouse herself. She reaches for the phone.
Hello.
Hello, Sydney.
Yes?
What's your favorite scary movie?
Who is this?
You tell me.
She looks at the number display.
Corey Gillis, 555-0176.
Oh, shit!
Hot flash, Corey.
Shit.
Prank calls are a criminal offense prosecuted under Penal Code 653M. Hope you enjoyed the movie.
Time to change numbers again?
No, it'll die off. It's opening weekend, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Her roommate shrugs and turns on the TV.
You know, Ron, it's not an easy thing to be accused of a crime you didn't commit, particularly one as heinous as murder.
But how do people treat you now that they know the truth about your innocence?
Most people are cool. There's some who still keep a safe distance, which is odd for me because I've always been sort of a people person.
But you were wrongly accused. You were fully exonerated.
Yeah, well, letting a nickel get you a cup of coffee, even that's not true anymore.
Sydney stares at the screen.
And now the movie, it set the record straight for Cotton Weary.
One would think. But Gail's been terrific.
Hey, move your ass, okay? You're late. Don't forget about we'll the routine right mixer tonight at the Delta Lama Zetas.
That was Cotton.
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it, Hal.
What? Come on, don't even try to beg, okay? Because you promised me.
A vague promise at best.
Well, nobody's asking you to join, okay? It's a party. Free beer, meet the girl.
Hallie, you know me in organized religion.
It's a sorority.
Worse.
Look, Sid, just lower the walls for the next few days, okay? This self-induced isolation you got going is not healthy.
I'm fine.
Yes, I know. I'm fine. It's stretched tightly across your face.
Another student runs up. Sid freezes. Hallie runs back to the TV. Slowly, Sid follows.
The two Windsor College students were murdered last night during a sneak preview of the new movie Stab. The police haven't released any information except for the victims' names, but a press conference is scheduled for later today. The victims, Maureen Evans and Phil Stevens, were both Windsor seniors.
Where's Randy? What started out He's got film theory this morning.
Ended with the brutal murders of two promising young...
Sid, a trim brunette, heads out. She walks through the reception area downstairs. As she opens the front door, reporters mob her. She hurries past.
You think there'll be more murders?
Cindy.
What can you tell us about
Cindy.
The victims, Cindy?
Talk
How about
to
the police?
Please.
We just
Cindy.
Need one statement.
Please, talk to us.
At a seminar...
You could say what happened in that theater is a direct result of the movie itself.
That is so moral majority. You can't blame real-life violence on entertainment.
What? Wait a second. Yes, you can. Don't you even watch the news?
Yeah. Hello. The murderer was wearing a ghost mask, okay? Just like in the movie, it's directly responsible.
No, it's not. Movies are not responsible for our actions.
It's a classic case of life imitating art, imitating
this
life.
This is not a hypothetical. It's not about art. I had biology with that girl. This is reality.
Thank you. I agree with you. Let me tell you about reality, Mickey. I lived through this, okay?
Life is life. It doesn't imitate anything.
Come on, Randy. With all due respect, the killer obviously patterned himself after two serial killers who have been immortalized on film.
Thank you, Ryan.
Are you suggesting that someone's trying to make a real-life sequel?
Stab 2? Who'd want to do that? Sequels suck.
No, come
on, man. Oh, please, please. By definition alone, they're inferior films.
It's bullshit generalization. Many sequels have surpassed their original.
Oh, yeah?
Name one.
Yeah.
Aliens. Far better than the first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there's no accounting for taste.
Thank you, Ridley Scott rules. Name another.
No. Aliens is a classic, okay? Get away from her, you bitch.
I believe the line is stay away from her, you bitch. It's film class, right?
Randy looks at his lecturer, who shrugs.
Another.
T2.
Mm. You've got a hard-on for Cameron.
Big one.
Yeah.
But wait a second. The first Terminator is historical.
Yeah.
Sarah Connor?
Yes. Wait, phone.
All right, okay. House 2, the second story.
What?
The entire horror genre was destroyed by sequels.
I got it, by the way. I got it.
Mickey.
Godfather, part 2.
The lecturer nods.
Oh, my God. That's my Oscar-winning achievement.
All right, that's enough. That'll be a wrap. The sequel discussion to be continued.
Sid's at the door. She beckons to Randy.
Mr. Originality, how would you make it different?
I'd let the geek get the girl.
Geeky Randy sprays breath freshener in his mouth and heads out with Sydney. Outside...
Oh, watch, nobody did anything. They thought it was publicity stunt, for Christ's sakes.
And would have been a good one, too.
It's starting again, Randy.
It's not. A lot of shit happens at the movies. People get robbed, shot, maimed, murdered. Multiplex is just a very dangerous place to be these days.
Yeah, and you are in extreme denial.
And you should be, too. This has nothing to do with us.
Randy, a guy in a ghost mask hacked up two people in a movie theater telling our life story.
Coincidence?
You know what happened at Woodsboro, Randy. You can't ignore it.
I know, Sid, and I don't want to go back there again. Can't we just go back to our pseudo-quasi-happy existence? Hello, Derek, how you doing?
Hey, Sid. I've been looking everywhere. I heard you weren't in class.
Yeah, I know. I skipped. I couldn't take all the that's for looks.
Is there anything I can do?
Well, you got any tricks for getting me back to a pseudo-quasi-happy existence?
You know, I might just have one for that.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, what is it?
Derek stops Sydney in her tracks and kisses her. Randy grimaces. He hangs back.
Get a room.
Then follows them. The campus is crawling with cops and press. Gail Weathers, a sassy reporter with henna-streaked hair, strides across the lawn talking into her mobile.
They're threatening to what? Are you kidding me? It'd be stupid to pull this movie. With all this free press, they're going to have huge numbers this weekend. It'll break box office records. Consider it done.
I'm Miss Weathers. Hi, I'm Joe. The affiliate sent me. I'm your new cameraman.
Yeah, you got experience?
Huh? Yeah. I mean, I'm local, but I shot the bingo finals.
Right.
I almost got an award for that.
All right, listen, Joel, this is how it works. I point, you shoot. You stay focused and fast on your feet, and you'll be along fine. Playing with the big boys now. You got it?
Got it. Got you covered. I'm all over it. Hey, look, don't worry about a thing. How hard could it be? You point, and I shoot. I'm there.
Excuse me, Miss Weathers. Could I have a minute? Just one second. I know you probably get this all the time, but I just wanted to say I'm such a big fan of your work. I just finished your book. I couldn't put it down. Insightful, probing. I just really, really loved your book. Thank you. Sure. I'm a writer myself. I just write for the local paper, for the Post-Telegram. I'm Debbie Salt. I took your seminar in Chicago last year. I was the one in the front row asking all the questions. I thought you looked familiar. Oh, thank you. I can't wait to see the movie. You know, you must be getting quite a lot of flack on that, right? With all the violence and cinema issues. What is your position going to be? No comment. Miss Weathers, please, it would be such an honor for me if I could just get a quote from you for my story. Begin quote. Great. Your flattering remarks are both desperate and obvious.
Ouch!
End quote. Gail, what are you doing here? Do you think these murders are connected to Sidney
Prescott? Miss Weathers, what's your theory on these murders? What's your feeling about this?
Have your attention.
Gail ignores them.
My name is Chief Lewis Hartley.
Chief Hartley. Hi, Gail Weathers, author of the Woodsboro murders. Do you think the killer will strike again?
We have no evidence that this is a serial killer. I'd like to read from
the... Can you tell us of any precautions that you're taking?
Well, first of all, we think it's just an isolated incident.
Randy and company look at the hordes of press.
Oh, my God, this is huge.
Do you have any suspects?
Sydney, look, it's Gail Weathers.
What?
Star of the Gail Weathers press conference, based on the book by Gail Weathers, soon to be a major motion picture starring Gail Weathers.
Be kind, she saved our lives.
She had calf implants.
Chief Hartley, do you plan on giving the town a curfew?
I'm gonna get closer.
As Randy heads off, Derek sidles up to Sydney.
So that's her.
Yeah.
A group of sorority girls slink up to Sydney, Hallie, Derek, and Mickey.
Hello, girls. Enjoying yourselves?
Oh, hello, Sister Lois. Sister Murphy.
Hello, Pledge. Hi, Sydney.
Hey.
This must be flat out hell for you. How are you holding up?
I manage.
It's really weird, isn't it? To think this fuss is all because of you. I mean, not directly, but in some 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon way.
Yeah. Now, Hallie, are you going to bring your friend to our little martini mixer tonight?
I have a lot of work
to do. We'll be there.
Oh, good. Because, Sid, we have our eyes on you.
You hang in there, and if there is anything we can do, the Delta Lambdas are very sensitive to your plight.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
The sorority sisters go.
You start to dress like that once you get in?
That's not going to happen.
The Delta Lambdas are the biggest bunch of fucking...
Hey! I'm pledging Delta Lambda, thank you.
Oh, my God.
Sid sees a young man in the middle of the lawn. Derek frowns.
Who's that?
The man seems disoriented.
Dewey? Hey! What are you doing here?
He and Sid embrace.
I was worried about you.
Yeah.
I heard about what happened when I was on the next plane. Can we talk?
Yeah.
They sit in a gazebo.
Are you okay?
I'm fine, Dewey. Was. I mean, things were okay until now. But, theater's going great. I got my first starring role. We open in 2 days.
Mm-hmm. That is great.
Yeah, I'm loving it. And I've got some great friends. And, I'm seeing someone. Nice guy, pre-med, no apparent psychotic tendencies.
Dewey smiles at her anxiously.
I just worry. Look, Sid. If there is some freaked out psycho trying to follow in Billy Loomis's footsteps, you probably already know him. Or her. Or them. They're probably already in your life. They get off on that. Just want you to be careful, Sid.
Sid gives a diffident nod and stands up.
You think I don't know that, do we? But what am I supposed to do? Cut everybody off, crawl under a rock? What?
Just watch out. Keep an eye out. I'm gonna talk to Chief Hartley and the local police. I'm gonna just hang around. I wanna make sure you're safe. If that's all right with you.
She smiles.
Yeah, I'd be on that.
Dewey looks round. He clasps Sid's hand, then limps away across the lawn. After a moment, Sid heads back to her friends.
Hey.
Hey. You okay?
Uh-huh.
Who's that guy?
An old friend.
Deputy Dewey, Woodsboro's finest. What's he doing here?
He's worried, our surrogate big brother.
God, nothing like a funeral to bring the family together. I'm gonna go say hi.
Randy wanders off.
Chief Hartley said the girl was stabbed 7.
Drop it.
Hello, Sydney.
Gail steps up.
How are you?
Hi. What do you want, Gail?
Well, I was hoping I might get just a few words with you.
Joel, the cameraman, steps aside to reveal Cotton Weary.
Cotton?
Hi, Sydney.
Here we are at Windsor College, where Sydney Prescott has just been reunited with Cotton Weary for the first time since she wrongly accused him of murdering her mother.
What the hell are you doing?
We want to know how you feel. Tell us everything that's happened, looking back on the last 2 years.
Sydney, I'd just like to say that I forgive and forget. Just like you, I'd like to get back on with my own life.
Do you have any comments?
You bitch. Oh.
Hey, deep breath. Not
on camera. Oh, Sydney, share with us, please.
Sid strikes Gail.
Okay. All right. Did you get that all film?
Yes, I got that all film.
Come on. Sid?
Sid's friends hustle her off.
Sydney? Where's she going?
Cotton's bewildered.
An official interview. What's going on? She didn't know?
Man, that was cold.
Hey, you need to check your conscience at the door, sweetie. I'm not here to be loved.
Gail, you promised me 10 minutes of national
coverage. You'll get your 10 minutes when I get my goddamn interview.
Don't walk away from me, Gail. I'm still... Gail, I did my part.
Joel!
Gail strides off. Joel tags along behind. Gail comes face to face with Dewey. She stops dead.
Dewey?
doing? What are you doing here?
Why don't you just leave her alone? Hasn't she been through enough? And my name is Dwight.
I was just doing my job, Dwight.
No matter who gets hurt in the process.
Hey, who got punched here again?
Well, I don't condone violence, but maybe you deserved it. Page 32. Deputy Dewey filled the room with his Barney Fifish presence.
You read my book?
Oh, yes, I do read, Miss Weathers.
Oh, Dewey, don't take it so serious. It's a character in a book.
Page 41. Deputy Dewey oozed with inexperience.
Gail smirks.
Right. Don't you think you're overreacting just a little bit?
No. What I think is that you're money-hungry, fame-seeking, and forgive me for saying mediocre, right? It's got a cold storage shed where her heart should be. No offense intended.
Dewey, I never meant to imply
that. How do you know that my dim-witted inexperience isn't merely a subtle form of manipulation used to lower people's expectations, thereby enhancing my ability to effectively maneuver in any given situation?
As Dewey glares at her, Gail smiles kindly. Dewey softens a moment. Gail moves to cup his face in her hands. Dewey flinches.
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say, except I'm sorry.
No, I'm the one that's sorry. I misjudged you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have some oozing to do.
He makes to go, then steps back.
One more thing. Nice streaks.
He hobbles away. Gail watches him go.
Wow.
Right. Students run towards a party in the sorority house. Hallie arrives with Sid in tow.
Hey, I am not a sorority pusher. I just think, despite its trivialities, it is a life-affirming, mentally stable, healthy environment for you. I mean, look at this little place.
I think you're taking your psych major a little too seriously, Hallie. I'm fine.
That's beginning to become your theme song. I'm fine. Yeah, fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
Sydney, you made it. Hi. No, I really mean that. Hi.
Hi.
Do you girls want a drink?
Well, actually, yeah, but you know what? We'll get it ourselves.
Hallie leads Sid off. The smiles of the sorority sisters fade. In another college house, a girl from the film class is surfing TV while talking on the phone.
I love those guys, and they're still together. I haven't seen it in like 3 weeks.
No, they broke up again.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Sarah found out that Bailey slept with Gwen. She dumped him like 2 episodes ago.
I wish she'd get her shit together.
Hold on. Someone's calling.
Omega Beta Zeta.
Hello.
Yes?
Who is this?
CC. Who's this?
Who do you think?
Ted? Where are you? Are you drinking? Hold on. Ted's on the other line. He sounds drunk. I'll call you back.
That shit only calls you when he's drunk. Don't go over there, Cece.
All right. I'll call you back. Okay, Ted, you sound loaded. What's up?
Who's Ted?
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. I thought you were someone else.
That's okay. I am.
Who are you calling for? Nobody's here. We're co-sponsoring the Acid Rain Mixer at 5 Gamma Alpha tonight.
Why aren't you there?
I'm sober, sister. I need to be here in case a drunk sister calls and needs a ride.
That's too bad.
Drink with your brain. That's our motto. Who are you calling for?
What if I said you?
What if I said goodbye?
Why would you want to do that?
Why do you always answer a question with a question?
I'm inquisitive.
Yeah, and I'm impatient. Look, do you want to leave a message for someone?
Alarmed, she pushes the button on her phone.
Omega Beta Zeta.
So was it Teddy?
No, some creep asshole trying to scare me.
That movie Stab, bringing out the crazies.
Shit.
What is it?
I heard a noise.
Where?
Upstairs.
She heads for the bottom step and peers up at the landing. Someone seems to be watching her.
Hello? Stop it!
I can't believe you're alone in that house.
I don't think I'm alone. I'm out of here.
She runs out of the door. Turning back, she speaks into the phone.
You're breaking up. Where are you?
Outside.
Don't panic, Cece. Call campus security.
Okay.
Cautiously, Cece heads back inside, punching a number into her phone.
Hi, I'm calling from the Omega Beta...
Sorry, hello?
Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Shit.
She tries again.
Yes, I'm calling from the...
I can't hear you.
I'm calling from the Omega Beta Zeta house. Like someone's harassing me. Hello? Shit!
Hey. Someone leaps out.
Jesus, Donnie, you scared me.
I'm sorry. Did anyone call for me? What are you doing here? I live here, remember?
I just thought you were going to the mixer.
Yeah, I am. I had the change, so I'll be out of here now. Omega Beta Zeta.
Cece there.
Mm-hmm. Who's calling?
It's Dad.
A masked figure sneaks in.
Your boyfriend.
Donnie hands Cece the phone.
I'll see you later, and don't forget to set the alarm.
Donnie goes. The masked figure's hiding in the living room. Cece locks the door and puts the phone to her ear.
Ted?
You wish it was Ted. Don't forget to set the alarm.
She lets the phone drop and runs to the alarm control panel, her fingers key in the code. She turns her back on the living room door, then looks round. Frowning, she steps slowly into the room. Hearing the dog bark, she turns. She retreats nervously backwards. On the TV behind her, an old horror movie shows a shadowy attacker towering over his victim. Cece ventures through to an adjoining room, all the while looking anxiously about her. The door to the hall stands half open, as if concealing a figure behind. Steeling herself, Cece flings it wide. There's no one there. Cece runs her fingers through her hair. She wanders out into the hall, wrapping her arms about her chest, shivering. She stands, staring at the phone. Swallowing, she goes to pick it up. From a cupboard under the stairs, the figure springs out. Cece ducks. The masked figure lunges after her as she races upstairs. Reaching the landing, Cece hurls a plant in its path, then flees. The hooded figure in its screaming mask chases after her as Cece darts up a smaller staircase to the floor above. Reaching the top, Cece pushes a bike down towards the figure. It shoves the bike aside. Catching up with Cece, the figure grabs her, then hurls her towards a French window. She flies through it, landing on a balcony. As she struggles to stand, the figure plunges its knife into her back. Picking her up, it launches her bodily over the edge. The figure wipes Cece's blood from the knife. Back at the party, the two sorority sisters have a firm grip on Sid and Hallie.
Everyone thinks that sororities are just about blowjobs, but it's not true.
We only promote safe condom sex.
See, we're about love, respect, and responsibility.
Harmonica style is okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
Cocktail?
Randy.
So long.
And you know, Derek is a Delta Lambda good brother, and we like to keep it all in the family.
Huh. Wow. You know, you girls have really given me a lot to think about. Thanks.
Sid greets Derek.
Hey, babe. You want to dance?
Oh, Mickey.
I'd love to. Yeah, with that tall, wide-shouldered fraternity boy. Sam, can you go arrange that?
That hurts.
Okay.
Empire Strikes Back.
Mickey to Randy.
Not a sequel, part of a trilogy completely planned.
Yeah, I like those little furry things.
The Ewoks. They blow.
Hey.
How you doing?
Sid and Derek.
Being nice to you?
Painfully nice.
I take it you will not be pledging Delta Lambda Zeta.
I think not.
Crushed.
Hey, guys, something is up at Omega Beta Zeta. Police are everywhere. Hurry!
Students follow the sorority sisters. Sid and Derek exchange anxious glances. Police cars screech up the drive of Cece's sorority house. Students run out of the neighbouring house, still in party mood.
I need to break up the party. Shit, I should have brought my drink.
Jack, hurry up!
Brandy, Derek and Sid are sober-faced. Sid watches as the local reporter, Debbie Salt, talks to a cop.
Death by blood trauma and there's a double stab. So it's definitely not suicide. Thank you.
As Debbie passes a press van, Gail runs round from the back of it.
Gail, hi, you're just getting here. It's not good. It's single victim sorority girl. So I gotta go. I've got a deadline.
Gail, bobbed hair, a little disheveled, calls to her cameraman.
Well, let's go.
In a minute.
Again, isn't it?
To Dewey.
You'd love that, wouldn't you?
Shaking her head, Gail turns away.
Better hurry, Gail. Might get scooped.
She glares over her shoulder.
Move, Gail.
Gail, I have to be honest with you. I'm not cut out for this. I mean, I was brought here to do an interview, not Faces of Death 14.
Do not fuck with me.
Joel's taken aback. Grim-faced, Gail walks away. Meekly, Joel follows, glancing back at Dewey, who's watching intently. Derek stands on the steps of the neighboring house with Sid, hugging her close.
Get your jacket. Let's get you home.
Yeah.
Sid steps back into the now empty house. Derek stays on the porch. Sid walks through the living room to collect her jacket from the back of a chair. She stops, then collects her jacket and starts to go. In the hall, she reaches the phone, but ignores it.
You about ready?
She gets to the door, then turns back.
Almost.
She walks to the hall table and picks up the phone.
Hello? What do you want?
I want you. It's showtime.
Then why don't you show your face, you fucking coward?
My pleasure.
The masked figure runs at her. She ducks past.
Sid?
The door's locked. The figure lunges at the door. The knife stabs through, narrowly missing Derek on the other side. Sid tries the window. It won't budge. She flees. The masked figure makes a grab for her. She escapes into the sitting room through one door. The killer enters via the other, but trips and falls. Sid darts through the kitchen and out the back door, coming face to face with...
Three, you okay? You okay?
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah. No, Derek, don't!
Derek runs in.
Dewey!
He limps across the garden.
Aaron, Derek!
Dewey stumbles into the kitchen. He ventures through an open doorway. Finding nothing, he returns and hesitates beside a closed door. Pushing it open, he reveals Derek stabbed in the arm.
You alright? He went that way.
Cindy, he's in here!
Dewey limps into the hall. Through the open front door, he sees the sorority sisters on the porch.
Is everything okay?
Frustrated, Dewey turns back to help Derek.
He got me. He got me.
His arm is bleeding.
Pressure to it.
No. Dewey wraps a bandage round it. Sid stands gazing at Derek. She breathes deeply, her expression resolute. At the police station...
Thanks for your cooperation. Hallie, I'll be with you in a few minutes, okay?
No problem.
Mickey waits with Hallie.
This interrogation of my crime-filled life.
I'm gonna go get a quick cup of coffee. You want?
Mickey shakes his head.
Want some, Sid?
Sydney's sitting in reception. Mickey joins her.
How you doing? You all right?
Not at all. You know, I knew this was coming. I knew this wasn't over.
You are not alone, Sid. Okay, we are all here for you. All right? Whatever you need.
Poor girl.
I know. It's crazy.
Derek could have been killed, you know.
But he wasn't. He's fine. He just needs to realize the 90s is no time to play hero. Why would anyone go back in that house anyway?
As Derek's arm's being dressed, he talks to the police chief.
I went around to the back of the house and ran into Sid there. It's when she told me the killer was inside, so I went in to see.
Ah, you're lucky there's no nerve damage. You're going to take it easy, though.
Dewey's listening.
So then you went back inside the house.
Yeah.
No struggle? He just cut you and ran away? You're lucky he didn't kill you.
Yeah, it's awfully convenient.
Say what?
Nothing. It's just a shame he got away so easily.
It's just a shame you got there too late. Right after he disappeared.
The policemen exchange glances. Derek looks nervous. Dewey narrows his eyes.
Yeah, it is.
Morning on the campus. A press van is parked by one of the college buildings. Lots of police cars have pulled up nearby. Gail's cameraman, Joel, is leaning against the back of his van reading a book. In a lecture room, Chief Hartley is giving a press conference.
We've got three victims. Maureen Evans, Phil Stevens, and C.C. Cooper.
Is C.C. the girl's real name?
No, it's Casey. Casey Cooper.
Gail, taking notes, glances at Dewey.
Casey Becker?
Yeah. Excuse me?
She was a young victim in Woodsboro, as well as her boyfriend, Stephen Orth.
As in Phil Stevens.
Maureen Evans, Maureen Prescott. That's Sydney's mother.
Do you think someone's trying to duplicate Woodsboro?
It looks like it.
Dewey frowns at Chief Hartley.
I think you have a copycat on your hands, Chief.
Jesus Christ.
What are you doing to keep Sydney safe?
I got my two best detectives guarding her.
In the grounds.
Do these guys have to follow you around everywhere?
Oh, we're attached at the hip.
How am I ever going to get you alone?
Derek nudges her.
Yeah, to be honest, Derek, I think it would probably be in your best interest to stay as far away from me as possible.
He stops in his tracks.
I hope that was an off-the-cuff remark that holds no subtext whatsoever.
No, actually, I mean it.
He scans her face.
I mean, look at you, you already got hurt. I don't want to see that happen again.
They sit under a tree.
I'll take my chances.
Derek, I'm serious. This is serious.
Derek considers.
You are concerned with my personal well-being and not with trusting me or anything, right?
Her eyes search his.
Like I said, I just don't want to see you get hurt.
And I don't want to see you get hurt. Okay, Sid?
He strokes her hair. She nods stiffly, gets up and walks off. Derek looks round nervously at the two plainclothes detectives. Chief Hartley shaking hands with Gail.
Take care, Miss Weathers.
All right.
The chief heads inside, passing Dewey on the steps.
Dewey?
Chief?
Dewey limps down to Gail.
Hi. So I'm heading over to admissions to do some legwork. You game?
I'm not here to write a book, Miss Weathers. Here to help Sid.
He starts to go. Gail stops him.
I want to help her, too. And help myself, of course. Come on, Dewey. Smile just once. Please.
I'll smile when I catch the killer.
Dewey goes. Gail walks past other reporters.
Gail, hi. So who do you
think? What about Sydney's father? Has he been ruled out as a suspect?
Well, he's supposedly out of the country on business, but that sounds a little fishy, don't you think?
I'm not here to do your job, Miss Salt.
What about this ex-cop Dewey Riley? It's kind of strange that he showed up.
Yeah, what's he doing here? Dewey's a good guy. Unlike some of us.
Gail marches away.
Really? Well, it just seems to me that if the killer is repeating what happened in Woodsboro, it's quite possible that the killer could be from Woodsboro. That's all.
Debbie Salt stalks off. In the cafeteria, Mickey joins Derek and Hallie.
I think Sue will let me interview her for my documentary.
Oh, yeah. You know, she turned down Primetime Live 2020 and Dateline. But for you, yeah.
Drop it. I've been thinking about this whole murder thing. Have you checked out Randy?
What?
I know he's an innocent victim first time around, but he's a little off, you know what I'm saying?
Come on, Randy, the guy's harmless.
That's what they said about Dahmer.
Guys, keep it down. Come on. What's up, Sid?
Hey, Sid.
How's it going?
Where's the Secret Service guys?
Over there.
Sid doesn't sit near Derek.
And which one is Kevin Costner?
The one on the right is Officer Richards. He is a Capricorn, divorced, father of two. And the one on the left is Officer Andrews. He is a Gemini, single, but I think he's gay.
Derek, penny for your thoughts?
Derek rests his chin in his hand.
This morning, I woke up with this feeling I didn't know how to deal with. And so I just decided to myself, I'd hide it to myself.
What is he doing?
Tom Cruise, Top Gun, 1986.
Derek, when you don't. Walked into don't. The room.
I think I love you.
Don't do this.
I think I love you. Isn't that what life is made of? No, it worries me to say, I've never felt this way. Hey, I think I love you.
He leaps on the table. The other students join in, clapping.
I love there is no cure for. I think I love you. Isn't that what life is made of? And though it worries me to say...
A student tucks money in Derek's belt. Derek points at Sid as he steps from table to table.
I only want to make you happy. And if you say, hey, go away, I will. But I think better still, I better stick around and love you. Do you think I have a face? Let me ask you to your face. Do you really love me? I think I love you.
Derek throws himself to his knees in front of Sid, then stands to acknowledge the applause. Sid gets to her feet. The couple receive a standing ovation. The two detectives look bemused. Derek takes Sid by the hand and fishes a necklace from his pocket.
Don't worry, Sid. I know things are a little crazy.
Isn't that a big frat faux pas?
Oh, yeah, that is a big no-no. See, you're not supposed to give your Greek letters to your girl. No shape, way, or form. The brothers are gonna kick his ass, but it's tradition.
It's tradition. It's good luck. It'll protect you.
On it, the letters OKB. Sid kisses him. She fingers the necklace. A TV is on in the bar.
So tell us about this part you're getting rave reviews for.
Well, I play this young girl, Sydney Prescott, who discovers that her boyfriend's this crazy serial killer who also killed her mother the year before that.
So what kind of research did you do for the part?
Oh, I
get it.
Book.
They get Tori Spelling to play Sid, and they cast Joe Blow Nobody to play me.
Randy points at Huey.
At least you get David Schwimmer. I get the guy who drove Jane Seymour's stagecoach for one episode of Dr. Quinn.
All right, then, let's take a peek at the movie. This is Tori Spelling, starring in the new film, Stab.
The TV host plays a clip from the movie. Tori, as Sid, walks down a corridor. A young man grabs her.
You scared me. What are you doing here?
Yeah, let me go, Sid. I didn't do it. I'm innocent.
I know.
Why won't you let me touch you?
I've been going through a lot lately, Billy. And then my mom...
Sid, I think you need to just deal with that and move on. I mean, when my mom left my dad, I accepted it. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Moms leave.
Yeah, your mom left town. She's not buried in a cemetery somewhere. My mom's dead and she's never coming back. Ever.
Tori, as Sid, walks off.
Stupid.
Ooh, I love scary movies.
I'll wait for video. Okay, let's get down to business. The way I see it, someone's out to make a sequel. You know, cash in on all the movie murder hoopla. So it's our job to observe the rules of the sequel. Number one, the body count is always bigger. Number two, the death scenes are always much more elaborate. More blood, more gore. Carnage, candy. Your core audience just expects it. And number three, if you want your sequel to become a franchise, never, ever...
How do we find the killer, Randy? That's what I want to know.
Oh. Let's look at the suspects. There's Derek, the obvious boyfriend. Hello, Billy Loomis. The guy's pre-madness, pity me, surface wound conveniently missed every major vein and artery.
So you think it's Derek?
Not so fast. Let's assume the killer, or Urs, has a half a brain. He's not a Nick at Night rerun type of guy. He wants to break some new ground, right?
Right.
So forget the boyfriend. It's tired. Who else do we got?
There's...
Mickey, the freaky Tarantino film student.
Dewey narrows his eyes.
But if he's a suspect, so am I. So, let's move on.
Well, then, let's not move on. Maybe you are a suspect.
Well, if I'm a suspect, you're a suspect.
Dewey thinks.
You have a point. Okay, let's move on to Hallie, Sid's roommate.
Mm-hmm.
Serial killers are typically white males.
That's why it's perfect. It's sort of against the rules, but not really. Mrs. Voorhees was a terrific serial killer, and there's always room for Candyman's daughter. She's sweet. She's deadly. She's bad for your teeth.
Dewey screws his face up.
Come on, Randy. These kids are your friends. Who do you think's the killer?
How about Gail Weathers?
Gail? A killer?
Why not?
Well, she is vicious enough.
She's an opportunist. Yeah. Isn't it conceivable she's planning her next book? That's what reporters do, Dewey. They stage the news.
No, Gail's a lot of things, but Gail's not a killer.
Listen, just because you're sweet on her.
No, I'm not.
Please, this is me talking, Randy. The unrequited love slave of Sidney Prescott. I know all about obsession.
He reveals a scar below his collarbone.
And pain.
And you've got your love scar to prove.
And so do you. And what's with that limp anyway? Because you were stabbed on the back.
Severed nerve. Look, Gail's no killer.
Okay, okay, whatever you say. But if she's not a killer, she's a target.
We nod. Outside.
Go. Let's get some establishing shots.
Gail, can we talk about that?
What is it?
Look, I'm a little confused here. I mean, with your given track record, why would you want to be here when the killer strikes again? I mean, granted, I should have read your book before I took this job, but I'm reading it now, and woo, I read what happened to your last cameraman. The guy got gutted. Now me, I'm gonna do what any rational human being would do, which is get the fuck out of here.
First of all, he wasn't gutted. I made that up. His throat was slashed.
What do you... Gail, gutted, slashed, the guy ain't in the union no more.
It's a job, Joel. And like every job, there's a few drawbacks. But you're a professional cameraman. You've got to act like one.
Yeah, but I want to report the news. I don't want to be the news. Besides, brothers don't last long in situations like this.
This is national television. Think about it. This is a big chance for you. The story is monumental. Don't you want to be a part of that? Come on. I need you. I cannot do this without you.
Joel softens.
Good. Come on. Let's get some work done.
Yeah, let's go get killed.
At a rehearsal in the college theater...
I've been through this before. You know what I think about your potential as an actress.
I know. It's just that with the murders and the movie and my life...
I do know how difficult it is for you.
Guys, I don't think I can do it.
The battle for the soul is fought in the forum of art. You're a fighter, Sid. That's why you're here. That's why this is your major.
Yeah, I'm a fighter.
I didn't hear that.
I'm a fighter.
I don't believe you.
She looks at her lecturer.
I don't.
She eyes him more steadily.
I'm a fighter.
Okay. So at the risk of sounding like a college drama teacher, if you've got pain around this kind of material, use it. This is your role, Sid. Cassandra is one of the great tragic visionaries of literature. She saw it all coming. The wars, the murder, the madness. She knew she was cursed. It was her fate and she embraced it. None of us can avoid our fate, but as an artist, you can honestly face it and fight it.
Sid gives a reluctant smile.
You're good.
There's no understudy. I'm desperate.
She grins.
You can do this.
Serious again, she nods. The lecturer stands.
Okay, everybody, gather round. Third act, one last time. Cue the music.
On stage, lightning flashes. Robed, masked figures of the chorus close in around a person huddled in a red robe.
Oh, behold, the tragic fate of Troy, that once the proud in life upon the hills of Sparta.
Blocks of pretend masonry start to fall.
Cassandra, her kingdom, family, and friends
Sid as Cassandra stands.
No crime against gods or man have I committed, save to speak the truth. And each hideous vision born from my mind has come to pass.
The lecturer watches.
Troy has fallen, not by my hand or wish, but as I foresaw.
A masked god is lowered on a thunderbolt from above.
So now, fate's vengeful eye is fixed.
The god points at her.
On me.
The chorus wield daggers.
So, Cassandra, where has the sweetness of life gone? What stage they tear from striking now at thee? What stage they tear from me? What stage they tear thee?
They make to stab her. One is wearing the skull mask. The lecturer gets to his feet as Sid, on stage, runs for her life, weaving between the masked figures, most with pretend dagger, one with a steel blade. Trying to escape, she runs headlong into the figure in the skull mask, who grabs her. She drops to the floor, then looks up to find an actor in a normal Greek mask.
All right, hold it! Hold it!
The figure in the skull mask has vanished.
Everyone take five.
The student actors pull off their masks. All stare anxiously at Sid. Weeping, she struggles to her feet, turns, and runs through a door into the wings.
Sydney?
Backstage, she stands by a collection of fly ropes. Sunk in thought, trembling a little, she shakes her head. Derek appears.
Sid, your escort has arrived.
Derek, how long have you been here?
I just got here. Is everything okay? What's going on?
What happened to Mickey?
We swapped. He had to edit. You get me instead. What happened?
Derek, don't.
She steps back from him.
Don't. I need to be alone right now, okay?
Derek leans closer.
Being alone is not the answer, Sid.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. I need some distance.
Derek blinks rapidly.
Well, do I get a say in this?
No.
He pulls back, looking hurt.
I guess I'm supposed to be understanding.
Yeah.
Sid's stage makeup is starting to run. Derek stares at her with resignation.
You got it.
Derek turns, head bowed, he walks away. Sydney watches tearfully. Gail's in the grounds with Joel, Dewey, and Randy. She draws on her cigarette.
All right, let's just assume the killer is repeating Woodsboro. Yes?
I have Bob calling.
I'll have to call you back.
That doesn't explain Sydney's attack. Sydney wasn't killed in Woodsboro. It wasn't for a lack of trying. The killer's trying to finish what was started.
Well, it says under protection, right?
Yeah.
What?
Bob really needs to talk.
Tell Bob I'll call him back.
When she starts smoking.
Ever since those nude pictures on the internet.
It was just my head. It was Jennifer Aniston's body. Anyway, you're forgetting something. In Woodsboro, there were more victims before the home stretch. Tatum, my cameraman, him.
Time out. See, I don't need to be hearing about no dead cameraman, all right? Now, I'm one of you guys. I am a verb away from vacating these premises. I'm gonna go get me some coffee, donuts, Prozac, see if I can find some crack, Special K, X, not Malcolm, and I'll be back when you guys start talking about something a little more say about the bellish, all right?
Joel heads off.
He seems a little shaky.
Don't worry about him. If the killer is following a pattern, then maybe we can figure out who's next.
I wouldn't follow a killer's pattern. We were all involved in Woodsboro. Could be any one of us.
Okay, so what do you want to do, Bonehead? You just want to sit here and wait and see who drops next?
Well, I don't know. Bonehead.
Gail gives Dewey a withering look. Randy grabs the phone.
Gail's not here!
I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
It's him. Who? The killer. He can see us.
Dewey and Gail look around nervously. All three jump to their feet. Randy keeps his hand over the phone mouthpiece.
Just keep him on the phone.
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. Just keep him talking. Come on, Gail.
Gail and Dewey search.
What are you doing?
Hi.
Look for somebody with a cell phone.
What's your favorite scary movie?
He'll never find me.
Yeah, what do you care? Let them have their fun. So, what's up?
What's your favorite scary movie?
Showgirls. Absolutely frightening. What's yours?
He runs to a girl on a mobile.
Wait, let me guess. A house in Sorority Row? Dorm that drip blood? Splatter University? Graduation day? Final exam? Am I close?
Closer than you think.
Randy's knocked into by a ball player.
Is that the best you can do? Because Billy and Stu were much more original. That...
Gail grabs a girl's mobile.
Who's this?
Gail Weathers, author of the Woodsboro murders.
Who?
Dewey nudges her. Gail throws the phone back.
Hey, he's got to be around here someplace. He's just playing with us.
Gail and Dewey are facing each other.
White male suspect, 9 o'clock.
My clock or your clock?
Your clock. Go around the back.
They race off. Randy's still on the phone.
Why are you even here, Randy? You'll never be the leading man.
Fuck you!
No matter how hard you try, you'll never be the hero, and you'll never, ever get the girl.
Hey!
Randy tackles a man with a phone.
Wrong guy, dead boy.
Oh, yeah? Well, let's redirect a moment, Mr. I'm So Original. Huh?
Gail runs to accost another phone user. Dewey leaps on the boy from the top of a wall.
Dewey!
Can I help you?
Sheepish, Gail hands the phone back. Randy.
Where's your innovation, huh? Why copycat two high school loser-ass dickheads? Stu was a pussy-ass wet rag. And Billy Loomis, what the fuck? Jesus, what a rat-looking, homo-repressed mama's boy. Why not set your goals higher, huh? You want to be one of the big boys? Huh? Manson? Bundy? OJ?
A masked figure pulls Randy into the TV van. Students passing with a ghetto blaster drown out the sounds of a scuffle. In the wing mirror, a reflection of Randy being flung against the blacked-out window. The glass shatters and knives plunged in. The skull mask glares into the mirror, then climbs out. A pair of black lace-up shoes marches briskly away. Blood dribbles from the sill of the van.
Where's Randy?
Gail and Dewey look about anxiously.
Okay, I'll see him.
They start to run.
Randy!
They meet Joe.
What's going on?
Gail stares at the van.
Yo, man, who broke my window?
Dewey slides open the door. Randy's blood-spattered body lies on the floor. The mask is on the front seat by the open front door. Dewey hustles Gail away. Joel keels over. In the college library, students sit at computers. One of Sid's protectors paces idly. Sid works at a terminal nearby. Her screen turns yellow. She speaks to her neighbor.
Did your computer just freeze?
You have an instant message, that's all. Just hit Alt+M.
Yeah, but I'm not signed on.
Someone here in the library, all the terminals are connected.
Sid looks over at a couple sitting opposite. She strikes the keys of her computer. An instant message flashes. You're going to die tonight. Sid stands, knocking over her chair. The minders run to her.
He's here.
Message. The police can't save
you're
you.
The computer. Sid is probably just a sick joke.
The younger policeman escorts her to the open door.
Can I see your screen, please?
Wait right here.
Sure, yeah.
He runs back to the main body of the library. Both policemen scan students and screens. Sidney waits anxiously, clutching the fraternity necklace.
Sidney, you okay?
Cotton.
Can we talk for a sec?
This isn't a good time.
Come on, Sid. You sent me to prison. I did over a year for you. You can give me 2 minutes.
He takes her aside.
Sorry, every day I'm sorry. I don't know how to apologize anymore.
No, don't be sorry. Sorry. Shamari, Sidney, I have the solution to all of our problems.
What? What are you talking about?
First of all, forget Gail Weathers. She doesn't get it, Sidney. She doesn't see the story. Between you and me, she wouldn't see the story if it smacked her in the side of the head. I mean, have you read that book? Which brings me to my point. Who calls me out of the blue? But Diane Sawyer. Believe me, Sid, I was as shocked as you are. Anyway, she tells me that if you and I go on the air together, she will give us the entire hour.
What? We're talking prime time, Sid. You, me, and Diane Sawyer.
Cotton, I can't.
No, no, look. Sidney, look, this is about money. It's not like we're not getting paid, okay? There's $10,000 each, not to mention what I've got going on the side with a 900 number.
But Cotton.
I know. You don't like the press. I know that, and I respect it, Sidney. But Sidney.
He turns her face to his.
It's Diane Sawyer. Hello. She's a class act, Sidney. This could be some very, very heavy exposure.
He grabs her shoulders.
I'm sorry.
Look, between the movie and the book, people know the truth. Let's get on with our lives. There's been enough exposure. Why would you want any more?
What? No, I don't know, Sidney. I don't know. Maybe because I fucking deserve a little exposure. I mean, come on, Sidney. You drag my name through the mud. Everybody thinks I'm some kind of psycho killer. And all I'm asking for is one little fucking Diane Sawyer interview to maybe get my side of the story straight. Now, I don't think I'm being unreasonable in that request, Sidney. Do you, honestly?
He's wearing black lace-up shoes.
Sorry, Cotton, but no.
He twitches.
You sorry? I bet you're real sorry, Sidney. Such a good angle, Sidney.
Lovable and fucked up Sidney Prescott, everybody's favorite little victim.
He's jumped by her protectors.
No, what are you doing?
Keep your hand on top of your
Sidney.
Head.
Sidney! Shut the fuck up. Jesus, I'm not Billy Loomis. You killed him. He's dead, remember?
Chief Hartley.
Run it by me one more time, will you? Why did you attack Sidney Prescott?
I didn't. There was no attack. We were talking very heatedly. Miss Prescott and I have a very complicated past.
They're in the chief's office.
I didn't think that was a crime.
No, but homicide is.
Okay, then book me. Book me. Okay, look. I don't know about homicide, but you've definitely got me for raising my voice in a public library.
We're dealing with four murders here. You watch your mouth.
Sydney's with Dewey in the outer office.
It shouldn't have been Randy. It shouldn't have been me.
Yeah.
I should call his mother.
I already made that phone call.
Sid turns back, restlessly.
Are you okay?
Stop treating me like glass, Dewey. I'm not gonna break.
It's okay to break.
Hallie.
It's not gonna happen.
You better hope your alibi's airtight.
Could I please remind everyone here that I'm an innocent man? Don't you watch TV, Current Edition? That was a very insightful program on which it was made abundantly clear that I'm an innocent man. So until you find me standing over a dead body with a knife in my hand, I think you better treat me with the rights and privileges accorded to every innocent citizen in this country.
Sid overhears. Chief Hartley draws himself up, soberly.
Now, is there some problem with the word innocent? I know, it's a big one. Chief?
The police chief walks out. Dewey steps up to him.
What's going on?
We have to let him go.
Why?
We don't have anything on him.
Cotton walks over to the desk to pick up his things. Gail appears. She's picked up a mug of drink. She tosses away the dregs and glowers at Cotton.
Gail. Enjoying the show? Cops are funny.
What do you think you're doing?
Waiting for my 15 minutes of fame. You can understand that, can't you, Gail?
She steps slowly up to him.
Don't do anything stupid, Cotton.
Gail, you were so instrumental in my freedom. You're not having character doubts now, are you?
With a smirk, he saunters away. Gail watches him, a line furrowing her brow. He pauses by Sid.
If you change your mind.
Come on, take a hike.
He leaves her a card.
Sorry about that. What a creep.
Dewey grabs it.
They're gonna take you somewhere safe, Sid.
Yeah? Where's that?
I don't know. But I'll be there with you.
Sid smiles weakly. Gail, glancing at Dewey, heads out.
We should get going.
The girls stand.
Take you by the dorm. You can pack some things. We've issued a campus lock-in this evening. No one's allowed out after dark, okay?
Yeah. Who's doing this, Dewey? I mean, if not Cotton, then who?
I don't know, Sid, but I'll find him.
The young plainclothes policeman appears at Dewey's shoulder. He ushers Sid and Hallie away.
Gail. Any leads, Gail? Do you think the killer will come after you?
How does it feel to be on the other side of the news?
Miss Cotton. Cotton! Hey.
How are you, Bob?
Good. Are you still a suspect?
It's all been a huge misunderstanding.
Cotton, have you been officially released?
Gail, hang on one second. How about a photo? No? You look great.
How are you holding up, Gail?
I'm sorry, Bob.
Debbie Salt.
It's pretty scary knowing somebody's out there waiting and watching, enjoying all this. How does that make you
feel?
Look,
local woman, I know that you hold me up as your career template, and it gives you some sort of charge to challenge me, but give it a rest.
Debbie backs off.
You're right, I'm sorry. It was the wrong time. I'm sorry.
She joins the reporters round Cotton. Gail turns to go. Joel ambles up.
What's going on?
Ooh, let's see. For starters, they impounded my van. It's now an official crime scene, thanks to you. Here's your footage. Enjoy. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
Joel, I need you.
No, you need to have your head examined.
Joel dumps a heavy bag and walks towards a waiting taxi. Gail closes her eyes. Dewey limps down the steps of the police station and gives her a brief smile as he passes her.
I feel bad, Dewey. I feel really bad. I never say that because I never feel bad about anything. But I feel bad now.
Dewey stops a few yards down the path, listening.
Is this just another brilliant Gale Weathers performance?
There are no cameras here. I just want to find this fucker.
Dewey turns to her, eyeing her intently.
I really do.
His expression softens and he limps back to her. Gale gives a resolute smile. Dewey bends down to pick up Joel's abandoned bag.
Could I give you a hand?
She watches him fondly.
What's in here?
Just some crowd footage that Joel shot.
Her eyes widen.
Hey, wait a minute.
She opens the bag and takes a tape.
If the killer really is watching and relishing every minute, then he'd be here on these tapes, right? At each crime scene.
It's worth a look.
She smiles wryly.
Definitely worth a look.
Excited, Dewey grins, picks up the bag, and they rush off. Night. The college buildings are dark. The grounds are empty. At the foot of a flight of steps, a stone nameplate bears the legend School of Film. Inside, Gale and Dewey run down a corridor. Dewey has a flashlight.
W room. Editorial. Video archive.
Dewey tries the door. It won't open.
Can you pick it?
That would be breaking and entering.
No shit.
There's gotta be a VCR around here somewhere.
What's in there?
They run into a dark lecture hall.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Perfect.
They head down steep steps to the stage. Gale takes them nimbly. Dewey lumbers behind. A video recorder is set up on the main desk. Dewey puts down the bag of tapes. Gale fishes one out.
Start with this one.
He drops it.
Sorry.
Oh.
They knock heads as they bend to pick it up.
I'm sorry. Did I hurt you?
No.
She passes him the tape. Their hands touch. Dewey furrows his brow and turns to the VCR, slotting the tape in one-handed and pressing forward search. Shots of Gale at Chief Hartley's press talk. Of Sid and her friends. Of Dewey with Gale.
You're a money-hungry, fame-seeking, and forgive me for saying mediocre writer.
Watching the monitor, Dewey winces apologetically. Gale grins.
You're cute when you're angry.
That's rude. I was being rude.
Their eyes meet. Dewey turns shyly away.
Dewey, I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt you. Hey.
She turns his face towards her.
Really?
Her fingers linger on his cheek. Dewey leans forward, kissing Gale. She runs her hand through his hair. He sits on the desk and she climbs on top of him, pushing him gently down. He pulls off her jacket. She helps, removing it, then kissing him passionately. The lights snap on. Another monitor starts up.
Dewey.
His hands on her breast.
Dewey.
He releases it.
Sorry.
That's not my footage. Outside.
The monitor's playing footage of Cece on the phone, then of Randy. Gail and Dewey watch in horror.
No matter how hard you try, you'll never be the hero and you'll never, ever get the girl.
Sorry.
Wrong guy, dead boy.
It cuts to film of Gail and Dewey in the lecture hall. They turn. A mask appears in the projectionist's window. Dewey races lopsided up the steps and into the projection room at the back of the hall. He peers through a camera trained on the room below, then turns, scanning the dark little room full of film canisters.
Dewey!
Dewey steps out, looking about him.
There's no one there.
A masked figure springs up behind Gail. Dewey runs, trips, tumbling headlong down the steps. Gail socks her masked attacker with a phone, then runs out of the lecture room into an empty corridor. She tries one door, then another. They're all locked. One opens. Gail shuts herself into a pitch-black room. She flicks on the light, locks the door, then turns. She hurries past banks of technical equipment, past a mixing desk and into a sound studio. She shuts the studio door. She stands with her back to it, then peers out of the large studio window. Tiptoeing across, she runs to a door on the outside and puts her ear to it. Hearing nothing, she walks back. She comes level with the studio window. There's a masked figure in the room beyond. Gail steps back behind a pillar. The figure throws open the studio door. Gail is hidden from view, standing against a soundproof screen. The cloaked assailant heads towards her, its black cloak fluttering. Several screens covered with foam panelling are set at right angles, making a kind of maze. Gail slips between them. She stands with her back to one. The masked figure slips in behind her. Not seeing her, it moves round the other side of the screen. Gail moves to the next screen. She stands one side of it. The killer creeps up behind the other. Her breath quickening, Gail dashes to the next screen. She makes a run for the far door, but it's locked. She darts through an open door, trying to lock it behind her. It won't lock. The room is stacked with shelves full of tape boxes. One shelf is parallel with her window into the studio. She peers between the boxes, trying to see in. Dewey limps into the room. He spots Gail behind a soundproof glass wall.
Gail!
Her back is turned and she can't hear him. Dewey is standing on an abandoned piece of pizza. Cheese sticks to his shoes. As he tries to free himself, the attacker strikes. Dewey's knifed in the back. He falls onto the mixing desk and grabs the talkback microphone. Gail turns and sees him. He spits blood on the glass as the masked figure stabs him again and again. He slithers down. Gail sinks with him, trying to reach him, but separated by the glass. Gail hammers on the glass in despair. She looks up at the skull mask of the killer. The figure runs for the door. Gail topples a shelf and blocks it. The killer wields the knife through the open crack. It runs to the window. It bangs on the glass, then grabs a stool and hurls it. The glass doesn't break. Gail shrinks back amongst the stacks of equipment as the killer pounds the glass. She cowers by a tape machine, hiding her eyes. When she looks up, the killer's vanished. Gail sinks down, trembling. Out in the ground, someone is watching. A flight of steps leads down to a door into one of the college buildings. Derek's waiting by a car parked nearby. The door opens. The two policemen appear with Sydney. As she comes up the steps, she avoids Derek's eye. The policeman put her bag in the boot of the car. Derek steps up to her.
So?
So?
Listen, Sid.
Hey! Wait up.
I'm her therapist. Bye, Derek.
Hallie climbs in.
We better get going.
Sid makes to follow. Derek touches her arm. She stops and looks up at him.
When this is all over.
He strokes her cheek.
I'll still be here.
And smiles at her. Sid hesitates, then tenderly kisses him on the lips. They gaze at each other for a moment, then Sid turns away and gets into the car. The car glides off. Derek stands and watches the red taillights disappear down the drive. A cloaked figure runs through the trees, appearing in the distance behind Derek. Another figure appears in front of him and points.
You! Prepare to die! You gave up your letters.
Yeah. Brown-cloaked figures grab Derek and bear him off.
Uh-oh, guys!
The sorority sisters watch gleefully.
So romantic. So Greek.
The guys wear the chorus robes from the play. The girls, waving pretend daggers, run after them.
I was in the wrong.
At a party on the set of Cassandra, Derek's been strung up to the god's lightning bolt. He's half naked. Students spray him with beer. The sorority girls playfully menace him with her daggers. A traffic light turns red. The policeman's car slows at the junction. Sydney peers out nervously. A metal grill divides her and Hallie from the policeman in the front. Hallie twitches her lips.
So where are you taking us anyway?
If we tell you, we'll have to kill you.
Don't ask, don't tell.
The masked figure looms outside, smashes the window and slits the younger cop's throat. The older cop jumps out. The figure vaults over the car roof, grabs him and slams him against the side. The girls are locked in the back. The killer hurls a policeman over the bonnet of the car. He tumbles forward onto the road. The killer climbs in the passenger door, turning to stare at the girls through the grill. He shoves the body of the driver out. The older cop jumps up, aiming his gun through the windscreen.
Out of the car, you fucker!
The killer rams into the car, who clings to the bonnet as the car weaves wildly.
Get down back there! Pull him, you son of a bitch! I'll pull your fucking head!
The killer shaves the side of a parked car. Sparks fly. He heads through a barricaded stretch of roadworks. The car knocks aside timber supporting a hoarding and rams into a wall of scaffolding. The cop's pinioned against the windscreen. His fingers twitch against the trigger of his gun, then go limp. In the back, the girls stare through the grill at the masked figure. Sid sees the bloody head of the policeman rammed through the windscreen. She hammers on the rear windscreen. Hallie tugs at the door.
I just must get out of here. We're not in this cop car.
A piece of scaffolding has rammed through the grill. Sid tugs at the mesh, bending it down. The masked figure sits motionless in the front. The girls pull the mesh clear. Sydney climbs through the gap, feet first. She eases herself through into the passenger seat. Terrified by the cloaked figure beside her, she looks up at the windscreen. The mangled cop leers back. The passenger door won't open. Sid steels herself to climb over the masked killer. She peers into the sightless, distorted eye sockets of the skull. She ventures a tentative hand to pull off the mask. Hallie watches from the back.
Oh my God. I don't see it. Don't. See it?
Sid catches her elbow on the horn and leaps back. She climbs forward again.
Oh, my God. Don't do that again.
She stretches across to the door handle. It won't open. Sid clambers over the cloaked body towards the driver's open window. She levers herself out and tries to open Hallie's door. Trying the handle one more time, Hallie curses, then moves towards the hole in the grill. Sid stands by the driver's window as Hallie clambers through into the passenger seat. Reaching across the masked figure, Hallie clasps Sid's hand. Sid pulls her out of the window.
Come on, let's go.
Hallie starts to run. Sid races after her.
Hallie, what? I want to know who it is.
Oh, no. Come on, Sid. Come on, please. I'm going let's just back. Go. Look, look. Stupid people go back, okay? Smart people run. We're smart people, so we should just get the fuck out of here.
Hallie, I'm sick of running. If we know who it is, then it's over.
We can just get the police.
Yeah, and when we come back, he'll be gone. It will only take a minute. I have to do it.
Oh, Sid. No, Sid, come back. Sid. Sid, come back.
Sid walks up to the car. As she nears the driver's window, she frowns.
Oh, shit.
What?
He's gone.
What?
Hallie's grabbed from behind. The masked attacker plunges the knife in and lets the body drop. Sid starts to run. Back at the film school, Gail steps out into the corridor. Looking wildly about her, she shuts the door cautiously, then starts to run. She bumps into Cotton with blood on his hands.
No, get away from me!
No. This isn't what it looks like. I found Dewey. I tried to help him. No, Gail, wait. Gail!
Gail runs off. Cotton looks at his hands. Gail races down the steps of the film school. Debbie salts at a payphone.
Help me!
Curfew in full effect.
Meanwhile,
Gail, it's right in the middle of a story.
I've got your goddamn story!
Matter.
Operator, this is an emergency. Get me the police.
What's happening?
The killer is Cotton fucking Weary.
Cotton Weary?
In the theater, a tape machine switched on. The tape spools labeled Fall of Troy, Act 3, Finale. On stage, a sun glows over the set of the city. In the grounds, a distant figure runs down the drive and across the grass. It's Sydney. She slows, then runs up the steps towards the college theatre. She lets herself in the back and stares, puzzled at the stage. She walks down a side aisle of the steeply raked auditorium.
Guys!
She reaches the orchestra pit and climbs up onto the stage.
Hello?
A spotlight catches her in its glare. She turns to face front, putting up a hand to shield her eyes.
Hello?
She steps backwards, looking up. A wall of fake columns descends, cutting her off from the auditorium. Sid runs towards the wings. Another flat drops down, blocking her escape. Sid struggles with the stage set door. Stage lightning strikes. The spotlight swivels, picking out a shrouded statue. As Sidney touches the cloth, the spotlight snaps out. Sid takes a few faltering steps in the half-light. A figure descends behind her. It's half-naked, strapped to a thunderbolt. Sid peers at its Greek mask. Hesitant, she takes it off. Derek's mouth is strapped with tape.
Derek!
She slaps him. He comes too.
Thank you. Thank God, sir. Thought I was going to be up there till opening night.
Shit, you hide these. I'm going to get out of here.
Brother's got me, sir.
Derek, he's after me. He killed Hallie.
What are you talking about?
The killer. He's here.
Where?
Right here.
A masked figure climbs up from the stalls.
You're fast, Sid.
Get me down. Hurry.
I wouldn't do that if I were you. You really want to trust your boyfriend?
Don't you know history repeats itself? Sid?
Sid stares. The figure pulls off its mask. It's Mickey. Blood drips from his temple.
Surprise, Sidney.
He uses a voice-altering device.
Fuck!
Since Derek here disappeared on my ass, I've been on my own all fucking night. Thanks a lot, partner.
You motherfucker! Sidney's crazy. You know me better than that.
Come on, Sid. I gotta have a partner. I couldn't have possibly done this alone.
God. Derek.
Sid. Oh, no, Sid, Sid. No, 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 no.
It's okay, Derek. We got her.
Sid, he's lying. Sid. Sid. Untie me. Sid. Untie me.
Boyfriend killer. Boyfriend killer.
Sid, the man is lying. Untie me. Sid. Untie me.
What do you think, Derek? Sidney experiencing some deja vu?
No. No. I am gonna fucking kill you! Fucking kill you! You are dead! Dead!
Mickey shoots Derek. Still strapped to the thunderbolt, Derek's body goes limp.
You should really deal with your trust issues, Sid. I mean, poor Derek. He's completely innocent. He's such a nice boy, too. He's bright and funny and handsome, decent singing voice, and he was gonna be a doctor. This was just the kind of boy you'd like to take home to mom, if you had a mom.
Fuck you!
Oh, so vulgar! Billy let you talk to him this way?
Billy was a sick fuck, just like you.
No, Billy was a sick fuck who tried to get away with it. Mickey is a sick fuck who wants to get caught.
Yeah!
See, I've got my whole defense planned out. I'm gonna blame the movies. It's pretty cool, huh? It hasn't been done before. You see, this is just the beginning, a prelude to the trial. That's where the real fun is, because these days it's all about the trial. Can't you see? The effects of cinema violence on society. I'll get Dershowitz or Cochran to represent me. Bob Dole on the witness stand in my defense. Hell, the Christian Coalition will pay my legal fees. It's air tight, Sid.
He aims the gun.
An innocent victim.
You're a psychotic.
Yeah, well, that'll be our little secret. Because people love a good trial. It's like theater, they're dying for it. And I've worked hard to give the audience what they want. See, that's what Billy was good at. He knew. It's all about execution.
Yeah. Well, you're forgetting one thing about Billy Loomis.
What's that?
I fucking killed him. Piece of shit!
Sid strikes Mickey with Derek's fraternity necklace, kicking his gun to the floor. He grabs her, slamming her against the pretend stone wall. She elbows him in the chest and darts behind a pillar. She shoves the pillar, knocking him down. He gets the gun and blocks her path. He tastes blood on his lip. He draws his knife.
Sid,
You got a Linda Hamilton thing going. No, it's nice. I like it.
Now who's doing that?
Derek's body's hauled upwards.
Could that be the mystery guest waiting in the wings?
Told you I had a partner, Sid. Surprise cameo just for you.
The door in the wall opens.
Gail.
Gail enters, shaking her head. Debbie Salt comes in behind her, pointing a gun at Gail's back. Sid stares at the reporter in disbelief.
Mrs. Loomis? What?
Billy's mother!
Nice twist, huh? Didn't see it coming, did you?
Jesus, it can't be. I've seen pictures of you.
This is 60 pounds and a lot of work later.
Hold the makeover. You should try it. Look a little tired yourself there, Gail.
Loomis removes her reporter's Mac. Oh,
you two are in this together?
Yeah, well, had to have financing. Tuition's expensive. Deb there, my backer. We met on the internet, psycho website, classifieds.
There's only an estimated 97 active serial killers in the country today, so Mickey here was quite fine. Definitely one on the way up. All he needed was a little guidance and nurturing.
There's only a mother can do.
Told you it was gonna work.
Wait to the trial! It is gonna rock!
Oh, Mickey, there's not gonna be a trial.
She blasts him in the chest. As Mickey falls, his gun goes off. Gail hit somersaults off the stage. Mickey, eyes wide, slides down a bloodied column and keels over.
Two birds, one stone.
Loomis aims at Sid.
Mickey was a good boy, but my God, that whole blame the movies motive. Did you buy that for 1 second? Poor boy was completely out of his mind.
And you're not.
No, I'm very sane. My motive isn't as 90s as Mickey's. Mine is just good old-fashioned revenge. You killed my son. And now I kill you, and I can't think of anything more rational.
You're never gonna get away with this.
No, of course I will. Everything's traceable back to Mickey, including the cop gun he used to kill everybody. But let's just suppose that you had gotten hold of the other cop's gun, and you chased Mickey, and there was a big shootout, a big scuffle, and you shot Mickey, killed Mickey dead.
She throws aside Mickey's gun.
But not before he got off one shot at you. Okay, so have I covered everything? Are there any questions, any comments? You know what, though? Who gives a flying fuck anyway? Let him try and track down the second possible killer. Debbie Salt doesn't exist. You're as crazy as your son was. What did you just say? Was that a negative, disparaging remark about my son? About my Billy?
No, Billy was a good boy.
Billy was perfect. You did a bang-up job, Mrs. Loomis. Not wise to patronize me with a gun, Sidney. Randy spoke poorly of Billy, and I got a little knife happy. I was a good mother. You know what makes me sick? I'm sick to death of people saying that it's all the parents' fault. It all starts with the family. You want to blame someone, why don't you blame your mother? She's the one who stole my husband and broke up my family. And then you took my son.
She trains her gun on Sid.
You don't know what it is to be a mother. To raise a child, to teach him, and guide him, and abandon him. Isn't Mickey supposed to be dead?
Loomis turns to Luke. Sid strikes her with a bottle, then runs through the stage set door, barring it behind her. Bullets sail through, striking the wall by the fly ropes. A rope is hit. Its stage weight drops. Loomis hammers at the flimsy door. Sid breaks a glass case to remove a fire axe. Loomis puts her eye to a bullet hole in the door. She sees Sid take the axe to the ropes. Above Mrs. Loomis, stage lights plunge down, narrowly missing her. She runs to the front of the stage, then recoils. Sid operates the lightning and thunder. Loomis aims her gun into the wings and shoots. Sid pulls more levers. Fake fire begins to burn. White ice flows over the stage. Sid hacks at more ropes. Scenery starts to topple. A column falls. Loomis stumbles. She gets to her feet as a lightning bar swings down. It crashes into the wall behind her in a shower of sparks. Loomis scales a flight of polystyrene steps. Sid chops another rope. A hinge section of wall tips. Pretend stone blocks rain down on Loomis. She falls back. The blocks bury her. Loomis is hidden beneath a mound of polystyrene rubble. In the wings, Sid pulls more levers. She looks about her, scared by the silence, then ventures onto the back of the stage, between the back wall of the theatre and the scenery wall. Loomis leaps through the scenery wielding a knife. They wrestle. Sid punches her and runs onto the stage. Loomis chases after her, stabbing wildly. Sid grabs a block of rubble and forces Loomis back. Sid trips. Loomis pins her down, a knife to her throat. Sid spots a gun in the rubble. She fights with more strength. Cotton appears in the stalls.
Don't you fucking move!
He jumps onto the stage.
Damn it!
He has a gun.
Okay, everybody slow down. I have had a very, very bad day, and I would like to know exactly what the fuck is going on here. Sydney?
Cotton, meet Billy Loomis's mother. She's the killer.
What?
He steps back, knocking against Mickey's body.
And who's that?
The other killer, Mickey.
Okay.
Look, Cotton.
Shut up.
Loomis has a knife to Sid's throat.
You're not Debbie Salt, are you? You're not with the Post Telegraph.
He stumbles.
No, but I can still help you, Cotton. You don't need her. Let me kill her. As long as she's alive. You're never going to be the lead story. That's what you really want, isn't it, Cotton? If you really want to be in the spotlight, just let me kill her right now. Then you're the only survivor. You're the star.
Cotton, gun aimed at Loomis, considers.
She sent you to prison for a year. Personally, I think it's rather poetic.
Cotton lowers the gun a little and stares at Sydney. He turns the gun on her.
No. No, Cotton, don't you listen to her.
Oh. Whoa. It's quite a predicament you're in, Sid.
Cotton.
I mean, she makes a good point. Let me think about this. Maybe you should, too. Bet you that Diane Sawyer interview's looking real good right about now.
Sid's head is tilted back, the blade of Loomis's knife pressed against her throat.
Huh?
Loomis urges Cotton on. His eyes flicker from one woman to the other. Sid swallows.
Consider it done.
Both women fall. They lie on the stage, motionless. Sid starts to move. She leans up and stares from Cotton to the body of Loomis lying beside her.
Wow. That was intense.
Dark blood stains Loomis's smart white suit. Sid starts to get up. The gun is still in Cotton's hand. He lowers it as Sid approaches.
Hey, Sydney, look, I want you to know that I would never, ever do anything to hurt you.
Cotton, give me the gun.
He frowns, then shrugs.
Yeah, okay, sure. Take it.
She bends down by Loomis.
Hey, Sid, you know, we should probably talk about what exactly happened here, you know? I mean, get our story straight for the press statement.
A hand grabs hers.
Can somebody get me out of here? Gail. Oh, are you all right? I've been shot. Of course not. Ow!
Give me your hand, Gail.
Ow.
Jesus, Gail, you scared the crap out of me. There's anybody else down there, is there?
No.
Cotton helps Gail up.
What's for reporting from the trenches, huh?
Shut up, Cotton.
How bad is it?
Just bounced off my ribs.
Jeez, Gail, you got more lives than a cat.
Sid retrieves Mickey's gun. She, Cotton, and Gail stare down at Loomis's body.
Can you one of those?
Sid hands Gail a gun.
Is she dead? I don't know. May always come back.
Mickey leaps up behind them. The girls pump him with bullets. He's blown back into the stage rubble.
Whoa!
Cotton gobs in horror. As the three turn back to look at Loomis, Sid calmly shoots a bullet into Loomis's forehead. Gail and Cotton stare at Sid.
Just in case.
She lets the gun drop and walks off the stage. Morning, Chief Hartley stands on the film school steps.
I've about wrapped it up, Chief.
Okay, Frank.
Take it easy. You got a couple broken ribs there.
Frank, I'm okay.
A paramedic helps Gail. Joel breezes up.
Hey, Gail, are you all right?
Joel?
I'm back. You know, I was thinking maybe we could get the scoop like in the old days.
He hands her a mic.
You're Gail Weathers, at Windsor College.
A stretcher trolley is wheeled down the steps. Gail puts the mic down.
Dewey!
She runs up the steps towards the stretcher.
I can't believe you're alive. Are you okay?
Yeah.
You hang in there.
An oxygen mask covers his face.
Knife went into some old scar tissue. Stay quiet.
They load him into a waiting ambulance.
I'm coming with you.
Gail gets in. Reporters run up to Sid.
Okay, tell us about what happened in there.
Sidney, can you tell us how it feels to be a hero?
Cotton is walking past. She points to him.
Talk to Cotton. He's the man you want to interview. He's the hero.
Cotton!
The press dash to him. Sid, left alone, catches his eye. Cotton looks delighted. Sid, fingering Dedek's fraternity necklace, wanders sadly away.
Look, guys, no one wants to give you this story more than I do. Unfortunately, there is a time and a place, and indeed a price for everything, so feel free to call me.
Come on, Cotton, tell us something.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We'll make a hell of a movie. Thank you.
Sid wanders past the ambulances, past policemen beckoning to a vehicle, and heads off across the grass of the college campus. ITFC audio description by Louise Fryer was read by James O'Hara.
Life's river shall rise, as she said, but then only the strong shall survive, as she said, but I'm feeling quiet.